Kia ora, welcome to Nerdmen's Podcast, episode 340. Today is Friday, November 2nd, 2018. This episode is called Adventures, only because that's what I called it when I recorded the very first version of this episode, back in, August or September or whatever it was, and I just didn't get around to changing it. And I'm not going to go back to listen to either of the two previous versions that I recorded to find out why I was calling it that or even what I talked about. Chances are good I'll repeat myself sooner or later anyway, so I don't know how much I can gain from that. But the reality is that the last episode wouldn't have worked anyway because I started out by giving the completely wrong date. I have no idea why. But anyway, the challenges I face, eh? Here in New Zealand, we are recovering from our recent royal visit. Prince Harry and his relatively new wife, Meghan, were here in this part of the world for a visit over the past couple of weeks or so. They arrived first in Australia so that Prince Harry could open the Invictus Games, which is a game, athletic competition rather, for people who have been soldiers who have been affected by war, either physically, like they've lost body parts, or post-traumatic stress disorder and so on. And so he was there for the opening ceremonies and attended some of it. Then he went off to, where did he go to? I think it was to Fiji in Tonga, I think it was. Samoa or somewhere, I can't remember. Anyway. And then they came here, and they sort of saw the sights. They went to Wellington first, and then they came to Auckland, and from there to Rotorua, and ultimately left. And by all accounts, no matter where they went, whether it was Australia or the Pacific Islands or New Zealand, they charmed the locals, and there was much oohing and aahing and gushing and carrying on. And they seem perfectly fine people, don't get me wrong. I'm not a particular fan of the royalty in general, or the monarchy, I should say, in general. But Harry and his brother both, and their respective wives, seem to be perfectly fine, decent people who want to bring the monarchy into a more modern time and to engage on more modern issues than some of the things that royals have historically done, art projects and culture projects or whatever, horse racing even. They want to do things that make a difference. One of Harry's big thing is mental illness, and so he works on that. And so as such things go, it went really well. As such things are, it was well received. There was some grumbling here from taxpayers who didn't feel it was that we could justify spending, I think it was like a million and a half New Zealand dollars to pay for the trip. To pay for their visit, rather. And, I think out of a budget the size of New Zealand's, I'm not sure that is such a, is that significant an amount, particularly when the British media in particular was covering it extensively, which means that it would be on their TV screens. And since the UK has always been a relatively strong supplier or large supplier or whatever, of both tourists and immigrants, that can't be a bad thing. So from that perspective anyway, it was a very successful trip for them and probably for New Zealand as well, I suppose, for the other countries. I can't speak for them. But I don't think it really changed anybody's minds about the value of the monarchy in modern-day New Zealand or necessarily even of these particular royals, except insofar as they seem like perfectly fine, decent individuals and who are trying to do the right thing. And in that sense, totally inoffensive. They don't carry the baggage that, say, Charles does, Prince Charles, or maybe some of the other senior royals, as they're called. But I did have to laugh because from time to time, the media here would report on some of the remarks made by the British press, I guess, following them around about how this thing or that thing was not proper for royal protocol. And I'm like, oh, get over it. This is the 21st century, for goodness sake. If they can evolve with the times, then they've got a lot more things to worry about than, say, a little tag showing on Meghan's dress or the fact that she made a speech in support of women's power, basically. She was congratulating New Zealand on the 125th anniversary of the right of women to vote, since we were the first country in the world to extend the right to vote to women. And apparently that was a little bit too political for the old farts who comment on the monarchy, or the royal family, rather. And like I said, I just think they need to get over themselves. This is a different age. And yeah, they shouldn't talk about specific politics, like specific parties, for instance, but to talk about basic values like human rights and the right of people to participate fully in the political and social life of a country, regardless of their gender. I mean, that's kind of non-political in the 21st century. And I realize that in some countries it very much is political, and in some countries it's becoming political again. But in terms of Western values, the equality of the sexes is pretty fundamental these days. And I think they're making a whole lot out of nothing, to be honest. But that was sort of dominating the news lately. We had a big kerfuffle about a National Party MP who had all sorts of issues. And apparently, he ultimately was admitted to, apparently for psychiatric care. And apparently, his party knew of his issues. He's a National Party MP for Botany. His name's Jamie Lee Ross. And apparently, his party knew about his issues, but they went on the attack anyway when he started making allegations about the National Party leader and leader of the opposition, Simon Bridges. And it was a particularly nasty and ugly time. And it damaged Bridges, his reputation and his, I was going to say his popularity, but he's not popular. He's about 7% when him as prime minister. So that's not terribly popular. But his standing certainly was very much damaged. His image was damaged. And I don't know that he can ever recover from that. But then I've said from the beginning that he's only a caretaker leader of his party. He will not be leading it to the next election in 2020. It'll be somebody else. And I don't know who. I know who I hope it's not. There's a woman named Judith Collins, who is just a horrible human being, and hopefully she won't become leader of the party, or if she does, that it'll make it easier to beat them in 2020. But I don't know. Meanwhile, the current government, on the whole, is doing really well. They're plowing ahead and getting things done as they said they would. They're being cautious. They're not throwing big piles of money at all the problems that they could do. They're not borrowing to do all the things that they want to do. They're maintaining fiscal responsibility, which is normally a conservative thing, but they've certainly been pursuing that. I think probably, in part, because one of their coalition partners is a conservative party, the New Zealand First Party. And the other reason is that they want to reassure the New Zealanders who think they're a bunch of insane lunatic leftists, thanks to the propaganda from the National Party. They want to reassure New Zealanders that they're a responsible party. And the reality is that Labour always has been. When Labour is in power, the economy does well. Businesses invest. They hire people. And when National is in power, they stop. They sort of retrench and hold on to what they've got. And this is just statistical reality. This isn't a political opinion or a political description or anything like that. That's just the way it is. So we had another controversy about this thing called the Business Confidence Survey. And it continues to be dismal. Businesses, primarily big business, expressing lack of confidence in the country and its future and uncertainty. This is always a thing that's supposed to be bad, uncertainty. And the thing is, it's just an opinion survey of people who lean right anyway. It has no real validity. What matters is what they do, not what they say. And any business leader who makes their decisions solely on which party is in power is probably not a very good business person. They need to be making their decisions based on the normal sorts of things that they would make decisions on, about their needs, the market needs, and blah, 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 all those sorts of things. So that was another tempest in a teapot. And it's all part of a larger narrative that's coming from the media and the National Party about how awful and chaotic and out of whatever the current government is. And it's just not true. The government is getting on and doing things. It is not a shambles. It is not chaotic. It is not in disarray. It is not fighting with itself. It is acting as our system of government, MMP, a proportional representation system, is meant to operate. It's meant to create coalition governments so that no one party is able to dominate politics. It's meant to be where parties come together, they hash out an agenda to move forward. Some parties win stuff, and they also lose on other stuff. But generally speaking, they move together on their areas of common agreement. And that's what MMP is supposed to do. National doesn't know about that because all of its coalition partners so far have been compliant, lapdogs even, and or they're only because they've put them in. So they don't know what it's like to have coalition partners who are strong and strong-willed and have their own agendas and their own ideas about doing things and want to do things completely different from them. In the future, maybe they will. They don't have any friends in Parliament right now. There's the only ally they have in Parliament right now is a guy who they put there by gifting him an electorate seat. And if it wasn't for that, he wouldn't be there, and they'd have nobody in Parliament on their side. So until there's another party that forms on the right, or center-right, more likely, they really don't have anywhere to turn. And so they still won't understand how coalition politics works. They have to rely on being able to get an unlikely target of a majority of the seats in Parliament just for their party. And that's unlikely to happen under MMP, but who knows? The future, we cannot see. But those are some of the things that have been going on in New Zealand, since the last time I spoke with you. I can't remember exactly what I was talking about last time, and I normally go back and listen before I record. I go back and listen to the previous episode. But this time, I didn't. I've been really busy. I'm about to start my monthly work project again. And I haven't been well and all sorts of other things going on. I'll talk about that a little bit later on. But one of the things I wanted to talk about was my last real episode, which was from July. I was talking about how my blog, the podcast, even my videos are all basically different aspects of the same thing. And Roger Green commented that he said, "I may have been one of those folks who never quite understood the need for your delineations, so I'm good with this." I'm putting things all back together basically as one. It's different aspects of the same thing. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that because there was a reason why I wanted to separate it. The gist of the story is that I wanted to take U.S. politics out of everything, essentially. That's why the Two Political Podcast was a spinoff in the first place, so that I wouldn't talk about U.S. politics on this podcast anymore. And I also I actually went to the trouble of setting up a separate blog for all of my politics posts, but it broke down when I couldn't quite figure out how to. It's too meta, but basically I couldn't. The gist of it is that it was too complicated. And the reason I started moving in that direction in the first place was because of the 2012 U.S. elections. I had people who were known to me personally, who were close to me personally, who one person in particular unfriended me because I had been pretty strong in my condemnation of Mitt Romney, who at that time was the Republican presidential nominee. And they were a fan of Mitt Romney, or at least liked his page. I suppose that makes them a fan. And at first, I was shocked because this is a person I never would have expected to do that. And so I pretended that I had accidentally done it and sent another friend request, which they accepted, and so on. But it got me to thinking that how many other people there could be who don't like seeing the political stuff but won't say anything. And that was part of my motivation for creating the Amerinds Facebook page, so that I could share expressly political stuff there without anybody needing to see that in my personal timeline. And that's the way it's been, well, not the Facebook page so much, because that's much newer, but not talking about politics, U.S. politics, on my personal Facebook has been the way it has been pretty much ever since 2012, or after the election, I should say. I've stuck to that most of the time. There have been a few posts I've put in, but most of my political posts have been more generic, about the political situation in the U.S. or the Constitution or something like that, not about party politics specifically or the things that I object to or support, as the case may be. But things, it's getting harder and harder to do that for a whole lot of reasons, not the least of which is the guy in the White House, who I have never supported, even when he was just a TV performer. I thought he was a jerk and I couldn't stand him then. So this is nothing new. But I couldn't figure out how to approach all of this, how to talk about that sort of stuff, given my reluctance. And it turns out that when I did talk about politics again, I had the exact same thing happen from somebody else. And it caused me no amount of stress and anxiety. As matter of fact, I was so upset about this. This is going back about a week and a half, I guess. I ended up getting a gout attack from it. Because longtime listeners will remember that stress is my number one trigger for a gout attack, more than anything dietary or what have you. It's always about stress. So I was very stressed out about this situation. I didn't know what to do about it. We sort of came to a rapprochement where basically I won't comment on that person's political posts and that person won't comment on my political posts. And I instructed them on how to hide posts that they don't want to see. And even suggested that they not follow me on Facebook, because if you're Facebook friends with somebody, you can unfollow, which means you won't see what they post in your timeline, but you still remain friends, which means it's easy to communicate through Messenger and all those other sorts of things. So far, the peace is lasting, is holding, but I think it's inevitable there will be some other blow up somewhere down the road. But it's because of all those sorts of things. This is even before the current occupant of the White House got in there. I didn't realize exactly how toxic things were going to become, of course. I don't know how many people could foresee that happening. But it was the motivation for my wanting to separate things in the first place, to avoid having to mix personal and political, because it was just too painful and too troublesome and stressful and all those sorts of things. And that was my original motivation. Since then, however, I've also come to a point where I kind of feel like those of us who do have a strong opinion, who can put our opinions together and into not facts, not just facts, but also into arguments that others may or may not find useful and or persuasive, we have a duty to put those out there. And it's to counter the narrative that of so much that we hear these days that is unnecessarily toxic, or that is too accommodating and too forgiving. And I mean that for, and this is one of the few times you can ever hear me say this. I mean this about both sides. I don't believe that one's own side, whether one is left or right, should get a free pass just because you agree with them most of the time. I think it's necessary to hold your own side to account up to a point. I don't believe in unnecessarily going after one's own side just to score points. It's when they are so clearly, you feel they are so clearly wrong about something, you need to call it out. But there is a difference between saying, I think they're wrong about this and here's why, and saying, these ignorant mofos, they should shut up about this thing that I don't like, because that accomplishes absolutely nothing, and it just gets them angry, and then they retaliate, and it just becomes this bloody war, and then the two of you stomp off in different directions and lose elections. Now, that's more of a factor on the left than it is on the right, because there's an old saying about U.S. politics. I learned this way back when I was at university, and that is that Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. And what that means is that Democrats have to be won over by their own party's candidates, and Republicans will vote for anybody with an R next to their name. It doesn't really matter. And in general, that is true. We all can come up with exceptions to that. Democrats will vote for anybody who's a Democrat, and Republicans will only vote if they can be persuaded that they're a good, decent Republican and all that sort of stuff. But in general, in the main, that is actually true, that Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. And I've always been reluctant to criticize my own team, because I don't want to suppress the Democratic vote in any way. And I also don't want to discourage the enthusiasm of those with whom I may disagree on 5% of the issues. Unfortunately, those at the ends of the spectrum, whether they're far left or far right, don't see things that way. And they tend to go after those that they disagree with on those 2%, 3%, 5% of issues, rather than those they disagree with 95% of the issues. And that's a failing for both ends of the spectrum. I think they're both alike in that respect. They're kind of mirror images of each other in a lot of ways, but they see the world in the same way, and that is that you're either with us or you're against us. And by with us, they mean 100% or 110%. And the real world is much more complicated than that. Most of us are liberal on some things and conservative on others. And it behooves us to realize that anybody we're talking to is more complex than we give them credit for, no matter how simple they may seem. But true, it's true that everyone is complex, and their approaches to issues aren't simple, and they're not easy necessarily, or easy to come by. And I think we betray rationality and reason and humanity when we start treating each other like mere cartoons, like caricatures that we can just decide to villainize and hate because we don't recognize who they are. So on my Facebook, which is my main social media outlet now, I have friends who are to the left of me and to the right of me. And I'm fine with that. I don't need to agree with them on everything to still have interesting interactions on other things where we might agree a bit more or disagree less, as the case might be. And I think there should be more of that in real life. And so my original desire to split off politics from everything else was part of that motivation. It was to try to come up with a kind of a peace zone, a demilitarized zone, where we could meet and not have the things that we fight over be things that we will fight over. But it hasn't worked out that way at all. Since the 2016 election in particular, things in the U.S. have become so highly polarized and so highly toxic that there is no way really to talk about anything remotely political or even about current events without somebody taking offense at what you're saying. So I take everything with a grain of salt now. I get far less upset with other people for saying things that I think are stupid than I used to. And I would wish that they would do the same for me, but they generally don't. But that was my motivation, and the realization that that's now impossible to avoid offending somebody no matter what, which has led me to sort of dump my whole original strategy and to just integrate everything together. And that's where I'm going forward, and that's also where I've come from and how I got there. So that's a bit of a more in-depth explanation for how things evolved the way they have and why I wanted to split things in the first place. Now, I talked up front about some health issues. In addition to the gout attack I just had, it turns out I also had a bit of a cold, which is still lingering. I think it's in its final stages, but it's a bit lingering. And I've also had some health developments. In September, I had what I thought was a tachycardia incident, a rapid heartbeat, and I ended up being admitted to hospital with atrial fibrillation, which is an irregular heartbeat in the atrium or whatever it's called, which is not necessarily life-threatening, I should say. I should point out emphatically. It can be, though, because what tends to happen, apparently, is that blood can, because of the irregular rhythm, the blood may not pump out completely. It may form clots, and they can go off to your brain and cause a stroke, or to your heart and cause heart attacks, or anywhere else and cause other problems. And so that can be fatal. So what they did for me is they upped the dosage of the drug I was already on to control my tachycardia, which is a fast heart rhythm, also not non-life-threatening. And they put me on an anticoagulant drug, and yeah, that was the basic part of it, and sent me on my way. And I'd been on this new drug for about a month, maybe 6 weeks, I can't remember. And I've felt so much better than I had on beta blockers, because the new drug is a calcium channel blocker. The beta blockers left me feeling really tired, sometimes profoundly fatigued, and also clouded my head. I had trouble concentrating. I couldn't read books. I couldn't even read a long magazine article. A few paragraphs I could manage, but beyond that, I just couldn't focus anymore. And it made me just unable to blog even, or to do much of anything else. But when I went off of those drugs, after they got out of my system, I felt much better. I felt more energetic. I was blogging a lot more than after that happened. And in general, things were much better. But when they upped the dosage of that drug, things started to revert back to where they were. And I'd been warned by the private cardiologist that I had seen who put me on this drug in the first place, that it had similar side effects to beta blockers, but not as severe. They are very similar because the drug left me very, very tired and also fuzzy in the head in a slightly different way. It wasn't so much that I couldn't concentrate, because I can. I had similar memory problems, especially with short-term memory, not just short-term, but especially short-short. In other words, you know, I'd do something and right then forget what I was doing. But it created an existential shrug that I just sort of like, eh, whatever. And I wouldn't feel like doing things. And because I normally blog at night, I would be getting tired by then, and I would just think, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll try to blog tomorrow. And then the next day would come, and sometimes I still couldn't manage to do it. And so my blogging has slipped back down again, my blogging frequency, and obviously podcasting has as well, although there are other issues there. As we all know, I don't record when there's somebody else in the house. So yesterday I had a consultation with the cardiology team from the District Health Board, DHB, we call it. And he pointed out something I vaguely remember them saying when I was in the hospital, and that is that the drug I'm on can have fights with the statin I'm on, atorvastatin. And what happens is they kind of like oomph up each other's battle strength, and it accentuates whatever problems one might be having. So they've cut the dose of my statin in half in the hope that it will ease the problems. Today's the first day that I've been on that, and so I can't say with any certainty that it's actually true. Although I do feel somewhat better today. That could just be because the gout is lifting, and also this cold I think might be nearing its end. I don't know. Time will tell as this goes on. But obviously I'm blogging about all this, and I'll put links to that blog in the show note, that blog post in the show notes. It's a sort of a progress. One of my greatest fears when I went off beta blockers is when I was going to try to get off beta blockers, when I was going to the cardiologist, was what if that is the best drug available for me? Although beta blockers are not good for me, apparently this drug is just about the best I can get. Because one of the other ones that doesn't have quite so many problems is one the doctor called a dirty drug, because it can cause thyroid damage and liver damage and some other organs damage. I stopped listening after that point, because he said you also need to have 3 monthly blood tests and be monitored very closely in order to be on this drug, because it is potentially so dangerous. And I thought, no. So we'll try this and we'll see what happens, see if this makes me feel better and more energetic and more focused and all those sorts of things. But that is the new development in this ongoing health journey. And I think I've said this on the podcast. I certainly have said it on my blog. One of the reasons I talk about this stuff is because of the possibility, however remote, that it might help somebody else in a similar situation. Because you never know how far your story is going to go toward or could go to help somebody else. And somebody might have a similar situation to me, or on similar drugs, or similar reactions to drugs, as the case may be. And if nothing else, they'll find out that they're not alone. Even if their reactions are completely different than mine, at least they'll know that they're not the only person going through that particular situation. I have friends with mental illness who talk about their journey for the exact same reason. As a matter of fact, that's what inspired me to talk so openly about what I'm going through, because it could help someone at some point. And besides, it is happening to me, and this is a personal journal adventure anyway. So there you go. And finally today, as I said at the very start of this episode, it is November 2nd, 2018, and that means that 23 years ago today, I arrived in New Zealand to live, to begin my life with Nigel. And that's actually where the whole story of this podcast, the blog, and everything actually began, long before I did either, was on November 2nd, 1995, when I arrived in New Zealand. So happy 23rd anniversary to us, I guess. But that is it for today and this week. And, well, we'll just leave it there. Maybe I'm optimistic that I'll have more this month. You just never know. Maybe if the pills work, then maybe I will. But that's it for today. Have a great weekend, everybody, and I'll talk to you when I talk to you. Kakite ano. Bye. You can comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amrens, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. This podcast is recorded and distributed under a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.